thank you again for joining us for today's Friday Gallery Talk, and welcome to anyone who's just joining us. Today we are very lucky to have the artist Dan Steinhilber with us to discuss his work Untitled. Dan is known for using commonplace materials in his artwork, such as balloons, light bulbs, trash bags, and, as we see in Untitled, paper-clad wire hangers. We're thrilled to have his work in our permanent collection and to be able to include it in our exhibition on collage and assemblage Over Under Next. Dan's work has been shown at Art Basel in Miami, the Baltimore Museum of Art, the Krieger Museum, the Museum of Contemporary Art in North Adams, Massachusetts, and the Socrates Sculpture Park in Queens, in addition to the Hirshhorn and many galleries. Please help me to welcome Dan Steinhilber.
Thanks a lot for coming. I'm amazed how many people are here. This is great. It's a real honor to be a part of this show that Evelyn curated and Over Under Next. And it's an honor for me to have my sculpture in the Hirshhorn, this hanger sculpture here. I guess what I wanted to do was talk a little bit about some of the work that was right before this piece, because this piece was 2002. And, I've only out of graduate school just like a few months or something when I made this, and in my very first studio after I had my MFA. And I'm trying to think, like, oh, why did I, so much has happened in like 10 years, you know, and what was I thinking about when I made this? And, trying to figure out where I was coming from. So I was thinking the best way to do that is to kind of go back just like a little bit, maybe the 4 years or so before, and just think about what I was doing. So I was just thinking about that. And in 2000, I started graduate school here, but I moved here from California, and I had lived in California for about 4 years. When I was out there, I was working in this very rural area, is right on the edge of a wilderness area, and I moved out there and was really enjoying, well, since I was born in Wisconsin, and it was very cold there, and I was indoors all the time. Being in California was fantastic, because even in the winter times, it would be sunny, and I could be outside, and it's less depressing when you have the sun on you all the time, like it was when I was in Wisconsin. But anyways, what I was doing was trying to figure out how I could do paintings and have them be in a relationship with the natural surroundings. So I could step outside of my house, and there was a river, and there was a big cliff of rocks right there, and there was all these trees, there was palm trees. I could drive like an hour, and I'd be at the ocean. And I had like a real lame job as a substitute teacher in the schools. But as soon as I was done at 3 o'clock, like every day, I was like a full-time artist until midnight or what, you know, and my studio was my garage. But I was making these paintings, and by painting these monochrome paintings on panels of wood and plastic, and I was responding to this environment that I was in, you know, and it's pretty romantic to be like outdoors making art, like a plein air painter, and then also have a very physical way of interacting with the art and the thing that it was representing at the same time. So I was also really enjoying the materiality of the paint and the objecthood of these monochromes, and I just made them basically for myself. I wasn't really involved in, I wasn't in a city, so I wasn't involved with the exhibition space. I was just involved with this outdoor romantic engagement with paintings as objects, and trying to figure out how to go into an installation with those things. And then in 2000, and I just documented them in, photography and took them down. And it, there was all kinds of problems with them, like the bugs would stick to the paint because I had to use oil paint to get the very specific colors that I was trying to get, you know, along like a log that was rotted, and I would make all these colors. And then I moved to D.C. and went to school. All of a sudden, now I'm in this urban environment, and in this context of, the goal here is to develop the work further and think about sharing it with other people in exhibition spaces, my colleagues, et cetera, like that. And I started having these opportunities to exhibit in these interior spaces. That's where the conversation about contemporary art is in the galleries, in the interior spaces. And what am I going to do? How am I going to change? You know. And so I started looking at my environment and finding the things that were around me, and how am I going to, you know, like for example, I did this piece with plastic to-go containers, which was a material that I just saw myself using, like getting a sandwich from a deli at lunchtime or whatever, and bringing it back to my studio. And now it's in my studio, and it's got an opportunity to come into my work a little bit. And I would fill make watercolors, put them inside these plastic containers and stack them up across a space. Or other materials, I started looking in culture in that we use as consumers, and that we use as you know, this idea that we're coming to a gallery or an exhibition, and we're sort of consumers of the artwork, and trying to make that connection about, you know, people, and also getting some of the things that I wanted to get from the painting, which is, I wasn't drawing in my painting, but I was just using the color and the object of the water. A variety of different objects I started using. A variety of objects I started using and filling them with liquids, and making, I kind of made a big series of wet sculptures, I guess is maybe what I might call them now, and where I put liquids into some sort of container. And I mentioned the to-go containers, but there was also plastic tubing and just a variety of different things. And one in particular that I'm thinking of was the sheet protectors. If you're going to put all your pieces of paper in a three-ring binder, I would clip the sheet protectors together, like maybe about 75 of them, but with no hard cover. And then I would just pour the watercolor mixtures that I made inside the pages of the sheet protector, and slowly fill each one more and more and more and more until there would be like an inch of water in the bottom of each one. And then I could add a little more and fill it all the way till it was the top, and they'd all be full and support each other. And it was a satisfying sculptural energy that actually was lifting itself up. And I could add color to those items and display them, say, outside, make a series of them so that you could experience those paint wet objects, that they were contained and they were separate, but they were also something that you could, that made you move in an actual physical space, and it resonated with that space. So then I had a show, a group show in New York City. It was my first time having a group show in New York City, and I did one of these pieces. It was the first show at Lux Gallery, and I was very excited, and I thought, what am I going to do here? This has got to be great. This is, you know, the curator asked me to be in the show, and this is going to be my big moment. And this was the piece that at the time I was the most excited about. I put a series of these things on the wall instead of like all the way around. With the sheet protectors, I just put like a half circle. So if you got your wall right here, they would fan out like this. So it would be like this big wet object, you know, three nails, and fill it with water. And I, you know, I'm in this beautiful brand new white gallery. And I went up to New York. The entire show was already installed, and except for my piece, because I was the out-of-towner, I guess, and running a little bit behind. And so they let me in the gallery just as they were closing and said, well, here's the key. You know, just when you're done, you know, lock the door and go. And so I said, oh, this is going to be a late night. And it was. And I got all the way to, you know, 11:30 midnight, and just about done filling up all the water. And I'm on my last one. And there was, I think, a stack of six of these things. and started sliding, like moving a little bit, and then instant, and I'm on a ladder too, and one of them went, it's like a huge waterfall because the drywall got a little water on it, which got soft, which made the anchor fall out, and boom, like I think there was four of them up there and two of them fell down, and it's a lot of water, it's like 10 gallons of water or something like that, boom, fell down and just flooded like this whole area, and the river started like going over under the wall and into the other room of the gallery. And then I found out that there was even like the gallery below the next morning was asking like, did you guys overflood your toilet or something like that? So I had to call the gallerist, wake her up. She had to come. We had to mop up all this water. It was just like such a nightmare. And then everything was seemed to be fine when they had the opening. Everything was dried out, and there was just the four pieces that were left up, and they fixed the wall. So I just left the four up high. And it was like this, it was kind of a white color, but just a little bit of pink was in there. It was just a certain pink that I was trying to represent a sunset, you know, like a sunset up on the wall in these sheet protectors. Anyways, by the end of the exhibit, I got a call from Jonathan Binstock, who was the curator at the Corcoran Museum at that time, and somebody that I had set up a relationship with and hoped to someday work with him on a project, right? And he said, hey, Dan, I was up in New York. I saw the exhibition that you're in at the gallery, and, you know, and it's a great show, but he told me that my piece looked terrible. It was molding. There was like black, gooey things. Like, this gallery had awesome windows, awesome light, and algae started to grow in my piece. And it didn't have this ethereal, beautiful look anymore. It was kind of disgusting. And this is, you know, and so that was like the last time that I did that piece. But I remember that feeling of like, man, I just so blew it, you know, I so blew it with this thing. And and while I was in graduate school, I lived in a house of it's a 96-year-old lady, and with my wife, and we rented one room there. And what we did in exchange was did their cooking and went grocery shopping. Also, there was also the daughter and the grandson lived in the house too. It was a very wealthy family. And so as the we kind of took care of just this piddly things that they needed, you know, and it was a great situation because it was close to the studio. And one thing that that I did for them was take their dry cleaning. This lady had like very nice clothes, and so we'd go back and forth to the dry cleaning. And I remember there was a grocery cart in the backyard that had a lot of extra coat hangers in it. And I also remember using the coat hangers myself, the dry cleaning coat hangers, because we had to take them off of those and put them on these, like, velvet nice ones that she had, all her beautiful dresses and stuff. And I remember using those coat hangers. And I think it was sometime I was taking out the trash in the back after cooking the meal and everything, and I saw some of those coat hangers, and I just took some of those and said, I'm going to take these to my studio. And I remember just having those in my studio and kind of hooking them on the ceiling and thinking about what are the things that I really need in these paint objects that I've been making that I could still get without the that tension that I was feeling with the wet pieces that I was making. And I started to make a series of pieces where I was just wanting to trust my instincts with the material for its inherent properties, for and not just the objecthood of the liquid and the paint, but the materials themselves. What do they do? How do I handle those materials? Or, you know, what is the gesture that I do with those materials, or, you know, and just slow way, way down and think about, I didn't study sculpture at all, but I'm wanting to make a sculpture. So I'm just looking at the very similar, the sort of sculptural gestures, if you will, that I already have, you know, just from life, and trying to connect that with the studio. So, you know, this piece comes out of that, just recognizing that, oh yeah, this is a sculptural activity that we all do, which is, you know, like we pick things up and we, particularly the hanger, and then hang them. And it's kind of a gesture of wanting to be buoyant, wanting to be organized, wanting things to be in order, you know, or it's a gesture against gravity, really, you know. It's something that we fight all the time with our bodies and our skeletons. It's like, and so what I did was I just, in order to objectify that motion, that sculptural motion, which I wanted to be able to trust, is just by repeating it over and over. And I remember just slowly looking at it and saying, yeah, this is still visual, because the light would come in through my window, and one plane would be turned a little different than another one. And I could kind of squint my eyes at it and be like, oh yeah, that's like a different shade of gray there. That's kind of like what I was interested in when I was making paintings, you know. It's like, it has like a visual kind of quality, and it's like in a painting space, because it's sort of buoyant. It's almost like pretending that there's no gravity. And then I remember stringing them down, and I brought it all the way to the ground, and I thought, oh, now it's standing like a sculpture does. You know, you can kind of imagine that it's just standing there, even though it's hanging. And here it's hanging from these cylinders that are, I like to think of them as like closet rods, you know, rather than maybe a canvas and paint. It's closet rods and hangers. It's not a painting, you know. It has this kind of sadness to it, though, I think, in that all what it's reflecting is, you know, in one way is the context of the interior spaces that we put ourselves in and that we frame our artwork. It's white, it's clean, it's antiseptic, you know. It's like, you know, what's dry cleaning. That's what you do with dry cleaning, is you don't want the real world or the mess of the real world in it. And so, but at the same time, you can still cast your memory on this blank canvas of the dry cleaning hanger and see, you know, something of nature, the way that nature has a way of twisting a structure, kind of the way, you know, it's up to you what you want to see there, you know, birds taking off, or the way water molecules organize themselves, or fish swim in schools. So there's the loss, you know, of the thing that's missing there. There's no color, you know, but there's, you know, and, but then there's relationships like Agnes Martin, you know, like, some of the patient pieces that she has, where she's like pounds a nail in a repetitive, manner, or Armand, you know, you know, this long history of, collage and assemblage, or architecture, you know, the way that we organize our spaces. And so I've gained that, some things and lost some things with it. But, what I did was, I've made a few different variations of the piece, and, I've shown it, these different variations in Miami and in Canada and Utah. And the first time I did it was in a gallery that doesn't exist anymore here in D.C. It was called Signal 66. And then I showed it in this museum, first in the lobby and then for my directions exhibit in 2003. And then we reinstalled it in the second floor, I think, which was a really nice context with the Donald Judd on one side and the Warhol on the other side. And they had this amazing juxtaposition, you know, the pop and the minimalism. And I think both of those things are pretty clear in this piece. And then it was reinstalled, I guess, in the basement for a collection show, and then here. It's great that they keep putting it back up. I'm very amazed, and it's the ephemerality that I was getting in some of those earlier pieces with the liquid watercolor was really something that I thought was special. In that they had like a lifespan to it too. And this piece, it's an installation, so it comes down and it goes back up, and when it comes down, it just goes back into a box, and then there's a drawing that goes with it. Well, there's a few different drawings because they keep changing the drawing each time we install it, trying to remember, okay, now how does this work, and how many inches away are the poles supposed to be? So it becomes a little. It has a possibility of becoming like sterilized again, because it's the first time I did it, it was just I did it, you know. And then the second time you do it, and the third time you do it here, it's like, oh, you have to sort of, how did I do that? And there's a, I'm not really sure how to feel about that exactly, but it seems like it stays alive for me because I we have to rethink the space. Like here, for this space, the ceiling was a little lower, so I didn't want to, the piece changed. I actually I subtracted two of the poles from the top, and there's just less hangers to keep the, so that it got, so it stays the right ratio of width and depth and height. And it's important to me that, you can walk around the piece and experience it with your body as you're walking and see the shifting positions of the elements there. They did a great job reinstalling it. I'm really pleased. But maybe there's questions that I could answer from somebody, if anybody has one. Yeah. Yeah, the materials I'm working with now, that's what the question was. What are the materials I'm working with now? I'm doing a figurative piece right now with casting, life casting, and wax. I'm also doing a sound sculpture that I started about a year ago, and I'm still working on now, where I'm using objects from... all kinds of objects, the types of objects that you have laying around in your basement or in your garage, and I'm recording the sounds that they make and reconfiguring the sound into music. So I guess the material is music. Does anybody else have another question? Yeah. Well, yeah. When I lived in California, we had a nice, really nice garage, and that was my studio. But now I've always, the last 10 years, I've always had my own studio that I just rent. And I have a studio right now. It's in D.C., yeah. Mm-hmm.
You consider yourself an international artist, I'm sure, but you consider yourself more D.C. or New York artist? Or...
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've had some international shows, like in Italy and Costa Rica and Canada, and other different states across the country. So, I don't know. I don't really think about it, but just, yeah.
You're a DC artist right now.
I live here, so that makes me a DC artist, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
I don't recall ever having some touch before.
Oh, okay.
I don't recall that. Is that a new one of your ego?
The question was, did this hanger sculpture always touch the floor? Because you don't remember that it touched the floor. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Always. It always did touch the floor. When I made a hanger sculpture in Miami, it only touched the floor in one point, all the hangers, and then it spread out almost like a tornado. So it was really wide at top, and they all spiraled down into one point. So that, but that was still touching the floor. Yeah. Yeah, in this museum, it's always been on the floor like that. I would say that the bottom plane of hangers is angled that direction, in the same direction that the light's coming from. So it jumps out at you. And that's maybe, see, you see that, you know, it's just the way that it's lit. If it would have ended up here, then you wouldn't notice that as much. I noticed that too when I came in, that, you know, because, yeah, it's a perception thing. Yeah, well, the question was about the process of finding the gesture that you want to use and then developing it into a final piece. Yeah, well, when I had my direction show here, I had this piece, and another piece was these bottles of soda that I mixed the colors. And another piece was an inflatable sculpture made out of trash bags. For the piece with the soda bottles and the soda, I was mixing actual liquid soda with sugar and color and everything. And the gesture for me was opening those bottles, and that sound, psh, you know, and pouring. So I would pour the colors, the soda, one into the next, and make these specific mixtures, and then with the and also taking them on and off these display racks that they were installed in, and then with this trash bag sculpture that I had in that exhibit, the gesture I think was the putting air inside of a trash bag, and I saw myself doing that with the trash bag, kind of fluffing it to put air inside of it just before you put it into a garbage can, you know, if you can, you know what I'm saying? So, and then tying those ties, those red ties at the end. So I used that action to create the this architectural inflatable piece. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Yeah, well, see, when I did this piece in the lobby for my direction show, I thought of it as site-specific in terms of the physical architecture, because it came out of the coffers space. There's these coffers that are all up in the lobby, so we picked one of them from the center of the coffer and brought it down. There's no place to check your coat at that time in the lobby. So it was maybe humorous in a site-specific way. And then also just the anticipation of just the museum control and cleanliness and all these kind of things, and white wallness, you know, like I felt like that is reverberating on the piece. But those are the ways that it's site specific, I think. Yeah. The question was, what pieces, what material that you've worked with has been the most challenging? And I guess because it's on my mind right now, I would say the from the show that I had at the Krieger Museum this last fall, that was probably the most challenging because it involved the computer. And it involved technology, it involved sound recording, sound composing, music composing, and a lot of electric wires, a lot of soldering of electric circuits, and all these everyday objects all mixed together. And there was a big learning curve to use the software, for one thing, and to figure that piece out. I mean, that it just took a long time to do one piece, 9 months, you know, that's all I did, really. Any other questions? Yeah?
I realized that most of the time there's a personal story behind your findings. Is it necessary that I have to know it?
She said, a lot of times there's a personal story behind my... Yeah. Right. Does it need to be a... Do you need to know a personal story behind... Yeah. Definitely you don't need to. It might appear that way because I have a microphone and I'm telling you my stories, but that's what you do when you talk to people, is you tell them some kind of a story. And I don't put a wall text next to it. This piece in particular is meant to be something that you can cast your imagination on, or your, you know, it's a fantasy. I mean, my closet doesn't look like this at all. It's more a utopia idea with this piece. You can cast your own, you know, your imagination onto it. That's basically what it is. You don't need to know the story.
Thank you very much, Dave.
That's it. Thanks.